Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for MacBreak Weekly is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com. This is MacBreak Weekly, episode 79 for March 4th, 2008. Louder than bombs. MacBreak Weekly is brought to you by Audible.com. For your free audiobook, visit audible.com/MacBreak. And by listeners like you. Thanks for your donations. It's time for MacBreak Weekly, and sorry about last week, folks. Just couldn't get it up. And, you know, when I can't get it up, it's hard to do a show. Well, it's not hard, but anyway, that's another matter for another day. Merlin Mann.
The Rim Show, ladies and gentlemen. Here at the Golden Nugget Casino in fabulous Las Vegas, Nevada.
Where's my rim shot? Andy Iannacco from the colossal waste of, what's the B stand for now?
Well, bandwidth.
Oh, it's celestial waste of bandwidth.
Celestial. I'm on a mission from God now to waste your time in bandwidth.
It's great to have you. Also from the Chicago Sun-Times, Scott Bourne is there, back from a long absence, because I think we missed you on a show right before we left.
Yeah, this is a 2-week absence. I've been, me and Alex have been busy, so, you know, I wasn't able to check in.
Well, I'm so glad we got you back on. Alex is also here. Scott Bourne is from the Apple Phone Show at applephoneshow.com, girlsgonegeek.tv, and Podango, and, you know, he's doing more podcasts than I am now. I'm impressed. iLife Zone, I'm very impressed.
Thank you, sir. It's my goal to impress you.
You know, my goal is to, we're going to start doing video a little bit. I'll talk about that in a little bit, but I'd love it if you guys sometimes would come up here and do the show so that people could see your shining faces.
Yeah, I got a face built for radio, Leo.
No, you don't. You're a good looking guy.
Yeah. Okay. I'll make the trip to Petaluma just because it's a pretty drive, but you know.
That's what I'm hoping. I'm hoping people will come up here. And then what we'll do, Andy, for you is we'll put a plasma screen with your mug on it. By the way, Andy, good news. You're on the album art.
Awesome. Yeah, I got a picture and everything.
It turned out we didn't have a snaggy, Nitrozac and Snaggy picture of Andy. So we put a placeholder on the MacBreak Weekly album art. But now we've got, we're going to take that TWiT logo out, and yes, it'll be Andy's head. In fact, those of you listening on an iPod, hold your iPod up right now. You can see his face. And for those of you listening on iTunes, press that little button on the lower left that expands the album art. Look at that. Isn't he good looking?
So you have neither. Just imagine Adolf Manju with a hat.
I'm trying to think of who Scott looks like. He kind of looks like Captain Kangaroo.
No, everyone that writes me says I look like, you know, Mr. Scott on Star Trek.
Oh, yeah, that's right. You're the James Doohan type.
He's going for Burt Reynolds.
Yeah.
Like, and it's like in the third of his five-act career, not the really awful fourth one, not the decadent third act, but the meaty where he's got some gray in his hair and he looks like he's almost ready to accept that he's not 23 years old.
Talk about the Boogie Nights era.
Well, that was the good era. That was the good era.
Pre-plastic surgery. That was stage four, stage five. We're looking for post-white in the hair, pre-plastic surgery, I think.
But after Cosmo.
After Cosmo. Oh, yeah.
After Cosmo. Alex Lindsay from the Pixel Core is here.
Pixel Core TV.
And Merlin Mann completes the set. Collect all five. Merlin is Merlin's from 43folders.com. So we were all kind of talking about, none of us has received an invitation for this Apple event coming up on Thursday. What do we think it's going to be, Scott Bourne? You're the one who probably follows Andy probably follow the phone the closest. So I'll start with you, Scott, and then I'll ask Andy. What is it going to be?
Well, it's going to be an announcement that there's going to be an announcement. They're probably not going to release anything substantial. They may release a early beta, even alpha version of the SDK with some tidbits or some information. The word we're getting is that the full bore kit will be available at WWDC, and they're going to announce that they're running a little behind. That's one version. Another version is that there might be, you know, a base kit given, and then they're going to add to it over the coming months. And then they're going to do some kind of deal where they're trying to show that through probably some connection to the SDK that they have made the iPhone more enterprise friendly. But I think it's going to be like sort of a non-announcement is my guess.
You agree, Andy?
Yeah, it's basically there's going to be a big post-it note on the middle of the screen saying IOU 1 SDK. Thanks, bye. But I think really this has got to be one of those events where you have to figure out how tactical this has got to be, where they really got to start putting some cards on the table. So yeah, I don't think they're going to be releasing anything that day. I do think that we're going to get both the dog and the pony show. Demonstrating all the different things you'll be able to do with the SDK. I think you'll see the roadmap for how apps are going to be released. I wouldn't be surprised if, as a way to put an extra layer of gooey sweet frosting on the top of the Cinnabon, that they decided to announce a 3G iPhone at this event, because they need to do something to make sure that everybody covers this event, everybody reports on this event, and everybody gets the message out, as Scott said, that all the things that you wish, all the reasons why you didn't buy an iPhone last year, you're going to be able to buy one this year, because we're going to support, you know, MS. We're going to support all these enterprise apps and all these enterprise infrastructures. I don't think anybody's going to be coming home with any changes in their plans that next day, but they'll at least have a roadmap for what they want to do for the next 2, 3, 4, 5 months.
So that would make sense then. None of us were invited. It's not really a press event. It's an event for developers, you think?
That's why they did. Good. We're going to go with that. That's why they didn't invite developers.
Really want the guys, that's why they left us out.
We're just as important as anybody else.
I'm not bitter.
I've never, ever been invited to anything.
You've never been invited to one of these? You've even spoken at Apple, but you've never been invited to a press event.
No, it's not breaking my heart. I wouldn't go. But do you guys get invited to, like, what do? They send you things? Is there a messenger?
Yeah.
Kind of a, like, oh, really? So
the, yeah. Actually, what they do is they put it on a MacBook Air. Before, they used to just be a MacBook Pro 17-inch. They put this lovely invitation. And the computer is yours to keep. And then a guy in livery, actually, with white gloves and really.
Exactly. I'm thinking, like, Scott's going to the door. He thinks it's his lunch.
Ding dong.
Open it, and it's like literally a man on a horse with a very long puny trumpet
and a glass slipper
and a scroll.
Listen, the only reason I go is it's free orange juice and nice croissants provided by Apple.
It's actually kind of Costco. These are fun because also you see the entire Apple press corps. You know, Jason and. And,
well, you know, I did cover for Twit, because you didn't want to go, Leo, the big new iMac announcement.
I couldn't go. Let's make this clear. Apple, I wanted to go. I wasn't inferring
your lack of interest. I apologize. But Steve walked into the room during the after conference.
You see?
And that had never happened. And he actually took questions. So, I mean, every once in a while, something surprising happens. I don't look for a big surprise out of this announcement. And I think Andy's speculation about the 3G phone, now that's interesting. Yeah. And there have been some rumors we've received that they were going to announce one, at this thing, but I didn't find them credible. If Andy has better information, I hope he's right. That would be cool.
Well, I think that there's a high probability that they would show, while the SDK may not be released, there's obviously some companies probably working on third-party apps right now using some kind of partial SDK. So I wouldn't be surprised that we see EA or
that's
somebody
what
else
like to see, yeah.
posting. Well, this is what we've already done with what we've been given, and wow, look at this, it's really cool, and seeing some of that starting to roll out, even though there's not a general SDK available.
Right.
I wouldn't be surprised if Apple showed some third-party apps that have already been developed from some of their closer partners.
Right. They need to demonstrate that this isn't going to be just like web apps. It's right. Even going to be even better than the Generation 1 user interface. They're going to show off things like the page curl that we see in the updated Maps app. We're going to see basically the difference between the very first iteration of the Mac interface in 1984 and then what they did after they had another year to think about it.
I think what we really need... We need to see Doom with the being able to move around by going back and forth with the iPhone and be able to fire with one little button and then be able to change weapons. I think that would be pretty cool.
Yeah,
because that's the hot game that all the kids are into these days. Doom 1, the open source.
Hey, I played Doom 1 for 6 hours on Virgin America on the way over. I thought it was stupid when I saw it, and then I started playing
the video, the Doom 1 Rick Roll video, where the weapon instead of the BFG 9000 is a boombox playing Never Gonna Give You Up, and it kills the monsters. I mean, they just die fast. It's a great video. I don't know how they did it. It looked like it was a level of Doom.
Have you guys ever used the Amazon iPhone app? I mean, have you ever logged on to Amazon?
Oh yeah,
I used it when it first came out.
Very good.
Yeah,
it's I don't know. If it were me, I there's all kinds of reasons why this is probably a difficult relationship for them to do, but not least because they're eating their lunch on music, as far as I'm concerned. But
Amazon's eating iTunes lunch, yeah.
My God, the quality, the price.
I agree.
What about the numbers?
The numbers are the opposite. In fact, iTunes is now number two, just under Walmart.
Anyway, all I was going to say was, if it were me and I were the guy who was going to go out and decide who would be demoing that functionality, I would start with Amazon, because talk about a disruptive application. That could show a huge alliance with somebody really big. And it could also show, hey, look, you know what? Look what we can do for people. You go out and you enter in, you know, scan the barcode or whatever, and just buy it right off of Amazon from there. So anyway, it wouldn't have to be that fancy.
Yeah,
I would start with a huge heavy hitter.
Being able to take a photo of the serial number at Borders would be, that'd be disruptive.
But they're already doing that. If you look at the shift in the iPhone commercials right now, it's not centering on the built-in apps. It's centering on customized, like the customized Facebook app, customized web experiences that are tailored specifically to the iPhone. Obviously, in a press event that's designed to show off what can be possible with the SDK, they're not going to show off a web app. But this is our.
That's why I was saying I would. That's why I'm saying I would have Amazon make an app. Is what I'm saying.
Dedicated app, yeah.
Yeah, no. But, I mean, it goes a lot further than a web app. What you've got is something that's with you all.
Download a 42 gigabyte catalog, so you can so you can buy things while you're in the air.
No, means that if you're in the air, you can type in the name of a book, and when you log back in online, you buy it automatically, or whatever. Mm-hmm. It wouldn't take a 40 megabyte app, but no, I'm saying it wouldn't be a web app. It would be something. No, but
I don't see the point to offline Amazon browsing. I mean, I see the point to having a built-in support for with that really great cut and paste and copy feature that we're all hoping for, to simply highlight something and say, please bookmark this as a possible Amazon search.
I think you're saying, Andy, is if an Amazon, there's no reason for an Amazon app not to be as what it is now, which is a web app.
What I was getting at is, though, one of the biggest victories that Apple has had is that they have succeeded in creating a third version of the World Wide Web. Before then, there was the real web. After that came the stripped down, no resources, no screen width, no graphics, no fancy anything mobile web that everyone uses on their smartphones, even the $500 smartphones. But they've succeeded in just 1 year in creating a third version of the web, where if you access Amazon, if you access Google, all these other services, and the host realizes that you're on an iPhone, it gives you an entirely different web experience. And this is pretty much unprecedented. I can't imagine a different company that would have succeeded and getting that sort of thing done.
I think that, though, if you had a standalone app, you'd have access to the camera. And I think that having access to the camera, I think that'd be very painful to do through a web app. And I think that being able to have access to the camera for a program like Amazon means that I walk into an electronics store, I walk into a bookstore, I walk into anything that Amazon sells, and I take a picture of that barcode, and I can order it from Amazon. Yeah,
that's a great idea.
You couldn't do that with a web app.
Well, that's an
you would
app.
Need a That's an application that a lot of people would use, and it would make people go crazy. But you know, I mean, at the stores.
That would be even better, not as an Amazon app, but as a general app. I mean, if the Delicious Monster people decided to make that as a portable edition that simply says, I'm going to record that I saw this game at a friend's house, or I saw this movie at a friend's house, or even I saw this bag of, shrimp flavored onion crisps at a party, and I want to remember that.
Well, Nokia's already there. You know, Nokia does have comes with a barcode reading application. They haven't quite connected the dots, but it's clear that they want to. They also have a screen reading application right now, which will read barcode out loud for blind users. So,
well, I mean, I think that also if the business model for that is to just take, fire it through Amazon and take your affiliate sale.
Yeah, there's
so
a good
the application
point
up. There's 4% of a lot of orders.
Yeah.
So.
Hey guys, I just literally while we're talking got an email from a contact at AT&T. If you look at the AT&T data page now, and this could be a coincidence, but it says to access AT&T's data, you need a 3G or Edge compatible iPhone.
Whoa.
I called it!
It's a change in the text from just a week ago.
There you go. I think that's pretty, that's confirmation.
That's now typical AT&T to release something before.
Apple
Steve
must
did.
Just hate them so much.
Well, every source that I have related to the iPhone works for AT&T.
Before using the iPhone cover features. You can only fly less than 2 miles with the new version of the iPhone.
Yeah.
I imagine someone who's just about to leave the company says, you know how I could really screw up both Apple and AT&T for shorting me in my last paycheck?
All right, so we've got some interesting apps. We've got gaming is obvious. What a great gaming platform that would be. I like the barcode Amazon tied to Amazon. What other apps would we like to see on an iPhone standalone?
Anything that's push related works for me.
You know what I have on the BlackBerry that's fantastic? It syncs with the Google Calendar automatically. It pushes and pulls from GCal. So I update the Google Calendar on either side, and it's always up to date. And that is a killer app.
I know.
Of course, as a photographer, I want the camera to be a little bit more fun to use. The jailbroken iPhones have a cool little photo app that lets you zoom in and adjust the brightness. And just those two changes make that camera infinitely more usable.
Yeah. There's a lot you could do with it. That engine, you could do all of that stuff, including video.
I'm hoping that the rumors are true that they're going to let us basically distribute free apps and then have people, you know, have.
Yeah, let's talk about that.
Sell them.
Yeah,
well, the rumor is, of course, is that Apple, if you want to sell your app, you're going to have to go through Apple and have it blessed and be able to sell it on iTunes. But if you want to give it away, the rumor is that Apple's going to let you do that, kind of like podcasting versus paid content. I don't know if that's going to be true or not, but it would be great because there's tons of little utilities as a filmmaker that I would love to have of being able to build, for instance, a little digital slate or a little or lots of coverage tools that are way too specialized to necessarily sell to a public. But I think that there's markets for those things. And hopefully, I mean, that's why you want a third party market, is to let people specialize into a niche and serve that niche with plugins.
Yeah, but what about the stuff that doesn't work?
That's the whole thing, is that if Apple, I mean, there's podcasts that don't work. I mean, there's podcasts that.
Yeah, I know, but there's a little bit of difference between a podcast on your iPod that you might be listening to on the train to kill time. And this is your phone and it's your life and it's your connection line. And, you know, we've all seen what happens when you load a Palm up with 200 third party apps, you start crashing.
That's true.
And my feeling is that while I know it'll be an unpopular position to take, to the degree that Apple controls the third-party apps through the iTunes store, there's a lot greater likelihood that the iPhone will be completely functional because they'll double-check that everything works together.
What about free apps, though, Scott? Would you say that there shouldn't
be? I'm not taking a position either way, but I'm just saying that, you know, it's an easy way for me to deal with it is I would probably avoid the free apps because I wouldn't know whether or not they would be passed.
So then if there's a certification process and of some kind, you buy and people like you, Scott, want to make sure that you only put certified stuff on there, you go through iTunes. That doesn't mean, in fact, that there can't be paid or free stuff that's outside of that process.
You can have a badge that said Apple certified. You know that.
Well, and you know they're going to make money off that.
Right. They make money on the iTunes stuff too, right? I mean, if you buy it through iTunes, they'll make money on it.
They'd be stupid to pass on that revenue stream.
Right now, I have to point out, you cannot buy games for an iPod that you don't buy through iTunes.
That's right.
I think
this is all encouraging, whatever the news is.
Well, it's discouraging if... Notice that there is not a great and wonderful and thriving game community for the iPod. And I think part of it is because you have to go through that process. So it would be discouraging to me if Apple said no development unless we certify it. We allow you to be part of the program and we put it on iTunes. In other words, killing shareware, freeware, and open source development on the iPhone. I think that would be discouraging. And frankly, given what Apple's done with the iPhone, I could see them doing it.
Well, if they do that, then that'll be an invitation to the continued jailbreaking
and
all that kind of stuff.
Exactly.
And I don't think they'll go down that path. But, you know, I would also say that, you know, they've modified their position on several things related to the iPhone. So even if they start there, Leo, doesn't mean they'll end up there. Tim Cook the other day in the analyst call said something that shocked me. He said, hey, we're not married to any particular business model, including locked phones. We want to make the best phones in the world. I heard that and my toes curled.
Well, that's just prudent. Look at how many phones are being used unlocked.
I know, but just the point is they are willing to learn.
Right. Well, when the market makes them.
Exactly.
Yeah. Well, that's business, isn't it? Merlin, would you like to see on the iPhone besides your Amazon app?
I don't know. I do like the idea of any kind of application. I mean, there's one that I guess I'll just beat the drum again. I still think they really need to get some kind of an application for managing tasks.
They have no to-do list on there even.
Yeah, and nothing that's really integrated and that syncs automatically. You can hack stuff up, but I think that's a big hole, like just from day one with Apple. There's lots of other stuff that I do like the idea of applications, the kind of last mile applications, something that makes a link that makes my life a little bit easier. So, you know, I use a lot of 43 folders that I got from David Allen, this idea of ubiquitous capture. So anything that makes it easy for me, you know, like when I'm in the tunnel on Muni, I don't have a signal. You know, I think people can really overstate what you can do with a web app because I don't have a connection everywhere that I go. Right. Anything that helps make that connection, I would look for. But very much at the top of the list, I would have task management.
A getting things done app, or just some.
It doesn't even have to be that. It really, I mean, the thing, what makes Apple Apple, and what makes people like Scott Bourne have the confidence to you know really look to every app they put out as the app you know that you use, is that integration. And so something that allows that to sync up with iCal, at the very least. It doesn't need to be a GTD application. It just needs to be some way to not have to hack the fact that if this is going to basically be like a portable computer, then I need a way to manage the action in my life.
You've got kind of a micro format with iCal, with ICS anyway. It makes perfect sense to make it, all you'd really have to do is have it do that. And then third-party people with like OmniGroup could do OmniFocus that integrates into that.
That's right.
And add all of that functionality.
The way that I'm envisioning it is you think about the way that most applications for iPhones work. It's, you know, kind of a basic, it's not so different from Gopher or WAP, right? It's a menu that you surf and you drill down. And I'm just imagining you would go to an area called tasks and then you drill down by the categories that are populated from iCal. And there'd be a plus button to create a new task. I mean, something like that can't be that hard to put together. Or at the very least, just, you know, God, even having a note application that you don't have to jailbreak your phone to sync. So
that's kind of nutty, isn't it?
It's really weird. I mean, I realize that this is just the color of my crystal and it's the stuff that interests me and my folks that share my interest, but it's a really big hole to leave for this long. And I think it's inexcusable. Over.
We're just thinking.
I want a drum machine. I mean, like a little, like play drums.
Well, a Zen drum.
You know, there's that great piano cording, the cording piano that you can get keyboard for. I mean, if you look at what they've done with jailbreak apps in a very, you know, difficult environment, they've done some, I think, inspiring and interesting stuff. I'm sure you'd see a drum machine.
There's so much possible. I mean, I've seen some jailbreak stuff that just is mind-blowing. I'm hoping that some of that gets migrated.
Yeah, I agree.
Maybe the SDK will include a upgrade path on the new MacBook Pros. It makes sense.
New MacBook Pros are out. Thank you for that segue. I owe you one, Scott. In fact, that's how long it's been since we've talked, because Apple slipstreamed an upgrade. They didn't make a big deal about it to not only the MacBook Pros, but to the MacBooks as well. LED screens now available for the MacBook Pros. New faster processors. A new chipset. I guess it's not. It's still Santa Rosa, but they are using the new Penryn chips from Intel, which are much smaller. That are 45 nanometer process. So that means lower heat, which means better juice, better battery life. One would hope, and so far benchmarks have said that. Not much faster, but nice screens. Did you run out and buy one, Scott?
Well, here's the deal. You remember my promise? I promised to go all through 2007.
Oh, yeah.
My MacBook Pro, and I did it. And, you know, for me, 6 months with a laptop's a long time.
Yep.
And I was like, okay, the new one's coming out. Finally, I'll get it. And I looked at the thing, and I was about ready to buy it. And I was like, but wait a minute. Excuse me. And I looked at some benchmarks. It's 1-7% faster.
Right.
And I'm like, huh? And so basically what I'd be getting out of it is 1-7% more processing power and an LED screen. And I think there's going to be a much beefier upgrade coming in the summer. So I'm going to hang out. I'm not sure. The other thing is, I've never seen the LED screen on a laptop. I don't know if it's great or what, but I didn't even know if I wanted it.
You know, I have to admit, Leo and I were sitting at the airport next to each other, and Leo had the Air and I had mine, and it was much, much brighter.
It's a lot brighter and a lot whiter. When it's next to my MacBook Pro, which is what, a year old, the MacBook Air is just it's extraordinarily brighter and whiter.
Is it easier to read, Merlin?
Oh, it should
is
be.
It easier to read?
I was really surprised because I've always been a flat, or what do you call it, matte, whatever you call the other screen. That's
matte. Yeah.
And whenever I would look,
or you can call him Bob, but mostly he likes to be called Matt.
whenever I look at somebody's screen like that, I'm like, that's so ugly and it's so like Windows looking. Bleh. But now, yeah, I love it. And even when you turn it pretty far down, it still looks really good and it's super crisp. When I say white, I mean as opposed to on the MacBook Pro, it looks kind of yellow.
Contrast is better. And the color experts tell me that it is much more reliable in terms of reproduction. You want an LED screen if you're doing Photoshop and color correctness.
Well, I don't do that stuff on my laptop, but I just
rightly
I
so.
figured I would probably want to get it, but like I say, for a 1-7% speed increase,
Has Apple in a way undermined themselves by doing so many upgrades? You know, I bought a MacBook. Of course, I bought a MacBook a week before they announced the upgrade. Don't laugh. That's not
the
nice.
Leo effect.
That's not. There is no Leo effect, and yet it still happens to me over and over again. It's just
what do you mean? There's no Leo effect. We've got 10 documented cases
I know,
of it.
No, it doesn't seem possible.
At some point, it's not coincidence. That's all I'm saying.
Well, the thing is, I thought I was safe. Look, they upgraded them in the fall. I waited through Macworld, no big announcements. I thought, well, okay, there's no way 3 months later they're going to do another upgrade, so it's safe to buy now. And boy, and I was wrong. And I think, though, it's besides the Leo effect aside, doesn't this impact buyers who are going to say, boy, you cannot predict now when there's going to be an upgrade? Is it ever safe to buy?
I think that's the idea.
Well, doesn't it sound more as if this isn't an intentional, we need to upgrade these machines because, darn it, the MacBook Pro line is supposed to be the pinnacle of technology. It sounds more to me as though they know that they're going to have to be buying these screens in quantity. They know they're going to have to be buying these processors in quantity. Rather than limp along for the next 3, 4, 5 months, why not take the stock that they're going to be, that they already have in hand, that they're going to be using into this fall's notebooks or the summer's notebooks, and start putting them in the old boxes?
Yeah,
rather than buy huge quantities of these old style LCDs that are not even going to be used anymore.
Well, and also, it's the Penryn chip, and Dell has announced Penryn laptops. So in a way, you're right. If it is in a way, Scott, the idea of keeping up with the Joneses. Also, I should point out, it does not update the chipset, and Intel has an updated chipset for Penryn coming out in a few months. So it seems very likely that this is going to happen again in just a few months.
I'm betting that Intel told them, we're not making the other ones anymore. You want computers? Here's what you get.
Ah, that may be.
I'm betting that's exactly what happened, and that's why they stuck them in there.
I don't know if Intel does that. Intel does like to keep some of the older chips around for people who want to do lower end and so forth. I don't know if Intel would make that deal. Maybe they would,
but I think it makes sense to just, I mean, they didn't do a lot of fanfare, they didn't do a big announcement, they didn't do any of that stuff, they just bumped it.
Yeah,
you know, and I think that it's just a matter of,
so that's to make buyers like me just not put
it
off.
House clean. I think it's just house cleaning of, you know, we now have a better computer, we don't have to, you know, I don't think that Apple makes big events anymore for its hardware.
No, apparently not.
You know, I think that they, and I think that they're focused. I mean, they make more money with the consumer hardware. I think that they're going to continue to, you know, that the hardware is going to, I mean, it still sells. It sells well. You want to keep it current, but I don't think that they want to necessarily take the PR punch away from the iPhone and the, if they had gone through all that fanfare and brought all that press in last week for a Mac update, you know, it would be hard to get them all back this week for an SDK update. You know, and so I think they're staying focused where on things that make the most money.
Yeah,
well, I'm throwing cobwebs on my current MacBook Pro. That's all I got
to
say.
But you know, I have to point out,
it's already 6 months old.
If what Apple's doing is following Intel's roadmap, and it sure looks like they are, then it would be prudent to wait maybe a little bit longer and get that new chipset, which should make, frankly, more of a speed difference than just getting the Penryn chip in there.
But I think it's also. We're in an odd place where we are, you know, we have almost the newest computer all the time. I think that, you know, for people who have been hanging on to something a lot longer, I mean, they just may get to a point where they need to get a new machine, and this might be the time to do that.
I also predict Blu-ray in the next upgrade, so I'm waiting for that.
I think Apple's wanted to do that. I think that's just a question of getting the drives at a reasonable cost and getting media prices down, because it's very expensive right now to get if you could find a blank Blu-ray disc.
A lot of the rumor sites say that it was actually slated for this upgrade, but some sort of mechanical problem kept them from releasing it.
I wonder how much of a software or firmware upgrade you'd have to do Blu-ray. Do you have to support now AACS, for instance, or whatever the encryption technique Blu-ray uses? If you want to play Blu-ray movies, Hollywood says you do. Yep. Microsoft did. And it's really to the detriment of Vista. I think that's been one of the reasons Vista has a lot of problems is the support for these copy protection technologies. And it's built into Vista willy-nilly, even if you buy a business machine, even if you don't buy a machine with HD. And I don't think Apple would do that. I would hope they wouldn't do that, but I think you would have to modify the operating system for a Blu-ray player if you wanted to play Blu-ray discs. Do you want to play Blu-ray discs on your Mac?
I don't really care. I'm just going to download movies.
I want to see them on a big screen.
I want to watch them, but I also really want to record them.
Well, that's I mean, I could see as a data recording device. Yeah. I mean, 50 gigs. I mean, that's great.
Well,
I'm just saying at this stage, I'm not used. I'm not wedded to actual physical media on movies anymore. This DVDs have become exactly like CDs, where it's just it's just the medium on which I purchase the thing before I convert them into a more useful digital format.
Ah, but you would need a Blu-ray burner, a Blu-ray player to burn them, to rip them.
Yeah, but
but assuming that that someone figures out a really good DVD ripper, a good Blu-ray ripper that's just as good as Handbrake is. I mean, I'm sort of questioning how useful Blu-ray is going to be to me. I'd much rather hold on to DVD and be able to make a version that I could put on my home server and pipe to any computer or any Apple TV or any device I have in the house or in my pocket.
Well, I have to think Alex's point is well taken in that, you know, I've watched several movies already now on my new Apple TV 2.0, and the experience was very good. The HD movies, they say it takes 7 or 8 minutes to start. In my case, 30 seconds. And I'd just soon not have to deal with the physical media. If they get enough, they don't have enough movies yet in the store, but once they do, then I can see making that a more consistent choice. So the Blu-ray isn't a big deal to me, but if they're going to come out with it, they might as well have
it. That's my sense of it, which is that there's no pressure on Apple yet to really do it. Not that they're waiting, but I mean, I think that they probably, if it's not quite worked out yet, we can afford to wait.
I doubt there's that many people who are waiting on particularly buying a laptop for Blu-ray.
Yeah.
I'm more interested in having a Blu-ray for my Mac Mini than my...
you use your Mini as a media device.
As a media device, yeah.
Yeah, but can't you buy an external Blu-ray? I guess you can.
I think you can. I haven't tried.
Yeah, we have one here in the studio.
And it's hooked up to a Mac?
Yeah.
And you can play the movie through it?
Well, we're using it as a backup device. So
play movies. I wonder. Yeah. As I understand it, and I know that our listeners will correct me if I'm wrong, but as I understand it, it's up to the movie maker, the person who's authoring the disc, to turn on these protections. And so far, nobody does require HDCP compliant hardware, but they could. So you could get in a situation where you've got a Blu-ray player, a computer that's capable of playing Blu-ray movies, a monitor that's capable of displaying them in high def, but it won't play because the monitor is not HDCP compliant, or the player isn't.
You know, the new Blu-ray spec does require, you know, an internet connection.
Right.
So they could simply set up a much simpler system where there's no kind of encryption. There's just an authorization code sent over the internet that says, yeah, he's cool, he paid the license, let's go.
Yeah, but if your internet's down, you can't watch a movie?
That would be the disadvantage of that.
That would be the
If you're on a plane. If you're on a plane, you can't watch a movie.
Now, they do. There's two reasons you want the Ethernet. One is, they say, so for upgradability. But the truth is, it's also so they can revoke keys. And they did build this in, because after their experience with DVD encryption being cracked in about 3 minutes, they said, well, what we're going to do is we're going to make it so that we can revoke the keys of the players. So if something has been cracked, we could just pull back the key and you have to update your system, and we can then update around the crack. So that's why the Ethernet.
But wouldn't it be possible that they could authorize a movie, send you the key, and then once the key was sent, it's stored somewhere and you could go offline and view the movie?
Sure.
So, I mean, you wouldn't actually have to be connected to the internet.
That's kind of what happens now if you buy Windows Media and you put it on a Zune or you put it on a player, it plays even though you're not connected to the internet.
I would prefer that system to, you know, a physical encoded thing, like, you know, oh my gosh, that stupid copy protection they started with in the VHS days. What was that called, Alex?
Macrovision.
Yeah.
Hey, I wanted to mention, as long as we're talking about that, that the Fox disc, the Simpsons disc that you bought with the supposedly, you know, unprotected data version, that version's, I've got a number of emails saying that version is protected. There are limits to what you could do with it. You can only play it on a certain number of machines or something. I'm not sure what the details are. I'll have to look and see if find the email. But they said it was protected, which is too bad, because that would be kind of
the guy
cool.
Who cares?
It's just amazing how they keep on cutting their nose off.
They don't get it. They totally don't get it. Some more news in the Mac world. Steve Wozniak apparently is not happy with Apple or anything. <He's> not, he doesn't like the iPhone. He doesn't like the Air. He doesn't like Apple TV. He gave an interview to the Sydney Morning Herald. And I'll try to channel Woz here. Tell you the truth, I was really disappointed when the iPhone was introduced. Half the phones in the AT&T at the store were, at the time, were 3G phones. I was shocked. This is what you've been saying, I think, Scott. I was shocked because Apple is bringing the full internet to mobiles, full web pages with pictures and everything, and it's not 3G. I knew that would be a speed detriment. It's a speed detriment.
I've never taken that position. I personally don't care that much about 3G.
All right.
I think that it'll be nice because it'll stop all the whiners from whining once it's there. But
I wonder what the battery life's going to look like.
I can tell you what it's going to look like. It's going to look a whole lot less than it looks like without 3G.
He said, I never heard that it was a battery issue. He said, I don't understand why it would be a battery issue. I get as much life on my 3G phones as I get on my non-3G phones. He says he still uses the iPhone. He praised it, but he also carries a Motorola Razr for taking calls and browsing the web. Oh, there's my phone. It must be. Let's see if it's Apple calling.
Steve's on the line.
Yeah. Apple. I turned up the phone ringer just in case Apple wanted to call and invite me to anything or announce anything. So if I go off and take a phone call this time, it won't be from Microsoft. By the way, I still haven't gotten it.
Yeah, it's funny that this is a weird timing because I just got a message from a source of mine who said that I was deliberately left off the list.
Oh, there you go.
I'm not going to count on them as a source anymore. I don't think I even like that attitude at all.
We did it on purpose. Let's see. What else did Woz say? He said...
he doesn't like the Apple TV.
Yeah, I never... he says he still uses the phone as user... When the MacBook Air was launched in January, Wozniak agreed with the criticisms about the lack of DVD and missing Ethernet. He says, I don't think it's going to be a hit. By the way, the sales figures are out. It's a hit. But that was before the interview. He said he likes to burn a lot of DVDs for friends.
Well, that's good. I'm a billionaire, and if you're into copyright law, you might want to sue me.
And he also likes
I can afford to buy everything that comes out the moment it comes out, and yet
I burn it for my friends. And he also watches movies on planes, so he needs the ability to swap batteries mid-flight, and I think that's true. I'm trying to figure out a way to make the Air a part of my life, he says, because I'm a one laptop kind of guy. But I don't feel it's a benefit if you have to carry the Air plus a DVD player plus a couple extra dongles to connect to Ethernet things, and also maybe an extra hard disk to carry your music. But still, there's a pureness about it. And
I could have had a fine Tuesday without thinking about either Steve Wozniak's lap or his dongle.
Okay, bada bing.
He says Apple TV is a really good indicator of where the future is, but he doesn't like the. He must listen to this show. I have been remiss. I've talked to Woz back and forth several times. He wants to be on the show. I will get him on the show.
Kidding. You should totally have him on.
Oh yeah, he'd love to. He's very amenable.
Oh, he's totally like he hangs out and talks to people.
Oh yeah, we've had him on Twit many times.
Yeah, it'd be great to have him on.
In fact, we had him on the Twit that people hated more than any other Twit until last week.
So now you can't just leave that out there. What happened?
Now he can come on Twit. Oh, I had Dave Weiner on, and everybody got upset. And I thought Dave was great, but Dave is a little prickly, and he was talking about RSS and stuff, and people thought he was insulting. I don't know.
He invented that.
He knows a little bit about it.
Did he mention that?
He invented it.
I love Dave Weiner because he's the only more prickly person on podcast than me.
He is very prickly. He was great. And Dvorak even said, I know nobody's listening anymore, but I just want to say I've really enjoyed this conversation. Anyway, it is now officially the most hated Twit, so Steve can come back because Yellow Lasers is no longer the... most hated Twit. That was the one he was on.
Did you get a lot of mail from people?
Oh, I always, I know when I'm going to get mail from people because, anytime you stretch the format a little bit, people, I blogged about this. There are people who really want Twit just to be Patrick Norton and me and Dvorak, all the old tech TV guys just sitting around. And then there are also people who just want it to be in, a tech news show. But as I said, the nice thing about doing it, these shows is we can do anything we want. We don't really have to, curry favor with an audience. We do what we think is interesting. And
if you get email number one, it reads something like this. Leo, if you ever have Dvorak on there again, I'm going to stop listening forever. Email number two says, Leo, if you ever fire John Dvorak,
exactly.
I'm going to stop listening forever.
Exactly. Actually, I did get one that said, finally, somebody more annoying then John C. Dvorak and Scott Bourne, Dave Weiner.
That's me. I'm glad to be on that list. I'm a curmudgeon in training compared to
these guys. It's a great list to be on, trust me. Anyway, Waz says he doesn't like the 24-hour time limit, which we've all agreed is too short. My life is way too global and unpredictable for that. I'd get interrupted by something and I won't finish it, and I don't want to have to pay again. Guy carries $20,000 in his britches, but doesn't want to pay another $3.99. I don't blame him.
But he's not cheap. He's just frugal. He wants to get value for money. I mean,
I don't blame him. Even if it's a buck, why should you have to pay again?
That has prevented me from renting nearly as many movies as I might have. I can only rent a movie if I know that for the next 90 minutes to 3 hours, I will have no interruptions. I will be able to start in this very session. Whereas I would love to just simply get a movie to have it. And then know that over the next 2 or 3 days, I can just consume it in negligible chunks.
My biggest problem is I'm not finding movies I want to see. I mean, I think Apple was reported as is that it's fallen way short of the 1,000 movies that they had talked about.
That's the problem.
I just want to point out that I believe, and all the data I've read indicates that, you know, this isn't necessarily Apple's fault. These restrictions were reportedly negotiated in by the studios. So, I mean,
it's not Apple's fault, but it's Apple's problem.
I don't think that matters. Yeah. No, I've bought my fourth, or I've rented my fourth and final movie until this changes, just because it's crazy. I mean, and I'm not going to lean on this whole kid thing, but it's true. If you've got a kid in the house, you're not going to sit down and watch Dr. Zhivago in a sitting. It's not going to happen. And Dr. Zhivago is one of the few decent movies that you can get on the
app. With or without a kid, I'm not going to sit down and watch Dr. Zhivago. But
you have a problem with Julie Christie? I want to hear about Julie Christie. I want to hear all about that.
The greatest movie ever made.
I saw it once.
Can she play the balalaika?
I would make out with Julie Christie and Omar Sharif.
Both. Those lips.
Now, how
his
does your
eyes,
feel?
Her lips.
Oh, she goes to bed early and leaves Omar and I to play bridge.
Really he is
TMI.
Anyway, I think this is something that we have underplayed and really should be more aware of. I think Apple's heading into a buzzsaw in its business model. As the record companies, and now I think the movie industries, are turning their backs on Apple. They don't want Apple to be so powerful. That's why the record companies offer unprotected high-quality music to Amazon and everybody else, but not to iTunes. And I think that's why the movie company, I think Steve Jobs fully thought he'd get 1,000 movies, and I think it's why the movie companies are saying, well, you can have Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure. I really think they don't want to give Apple any more power, and I think this is going to hurt Apple much more than anything else. Apple's got a great model. They've got a great end-to-end business. They've been very clever about putting all the pieces together. There's one piece they don't control, the content piece, and they're losing.
And I think, who else
is going to provide the movie studios and the record companies with a big wheelbarrow with which people can dump their money?
Amazon just announced that they're going to do high def unbox. I think these guys are moving aggressively.
These conversations have taken place with Walmart too, though. I mean, they all tried to fight Walmart because Walmart tells them what the box can look like now. They've got so much control over them, and they have to do business with them. And I think they're in the position
that's different. They have to do business with Walmart. They don't have to do business with Apple. You think they have to do business with Apple?
If they want to sell downloads to more than 8 people,
six
of which are buying them because they're pissed off at Apple. Yeah, they're going to have to.
Remember,
until someone else comes by that does iTunes better than iTunes, that's the way things are just going to be.
And they're not
They're not even close. Right? I'd love to see competition. I'd love to see someone give iTunes a run for their money. I'm never pro Apple. I'm always pro consumer. And real competition is always good for the soul. But again, you know, you can't just simply toss unprotected songs on Amazon and say, voila, we have iTunes. This is exactly how, you know, the Soviets tried and failed to do a space shuttle. They made something that looked like a space shuttle, but not quite so much. Well, now it's a Playland toy.
Really. Igor, get the crank.
I don't think you've given enough credit to Jeff Bezos, and I think you're going to be very surprised. And I don't think the real issue, though, let's just keep it at movies. You're never going to get Apple II off TV II off the ground and rentals off the ground if you only have crap to rent.
Well, I think that if Amazon, number one, if Amazon wants to be I still think, and I'll say this again and again and again, if Amazon wants to be competitive, they need to go get Adobe Air and they need to build a standalone application and give up on a web page. It is so painful to go buying stuff when you're used to iTunes.
It's absolutely not painful at all. You search Amazon for have you bought anything from Alex?
I have all my albums from Amazon. I have moved entirely off of iTunes to Amazon. I buy everything on Amazon.
I went to Amazon yesterday morning and I said, I want some Petula Clark. And so I searched on Petula Clark, the top level, right? It took me to the return.
The band presents your hit parade.
The lights are much brighter there. You could forget all your troubles, forget all your... Go ahead. I'm sorry, Merlin.
And then you click on where it says MP3 downloads. And you all I'm saying is, dude, here's what I'm trying to say. Here's what I want to get across. I want to get across that I have the deadest ears in America. I stood in front of an orange amp for 5 years, blaring at my head. I cannot hear the difference between any two things. I'm here to tell you, I bought a double album for $10 that sounds better than anything I ever bought on iTunes. I know they're not going to take oxygen out of the vertical or anything. I'm just saying that unless they can find a way, I think it's going to be a thorn in their side because people are eventually going to go, I want to buy huge amounts of music and I don't want to have to worry about the DRM.
I think once you start buying on Amazon, I now actually have a feeling of revulsion about going to iTunes and buying an album because I know it's...
iTunes is my safety school now for buying music. Yeah. It's not where I want to be.
If I buy something off of iTunes, it's a flippant little, like, I just want to listen to this right now and 99 cents is fine. The issue that
I have...
Well,
then
what
are you buying on iTunes? I mean,
TV shows. So, I mean, that's 90% of what I buy on TV shows.
Buy stuff at iTunes?
I buy almost all my stuff off of iTunes, and for one simple reason, because the Amazon, as good as its intentions are, as good as the quality is, and as important as it is to have unprotected songs, it's a Walmart version of a music store. They're not willing to sell you exactly what you want. They're willing to sell you something that's sort of okay.
I don't understand that.
I'm about to explain it. In terms of finding a specific Petula Clark album, okay, you're in there, you're in there good. If you're looking for a certain version of a song, however, they'll give you the Petula Clark version. They might find you one cover version, but if that's not what you're looking for, you're done. On the iTunes store, you can choose between 12 different covers spanning two or three decades. If you're looking for something that's a little more earthier, a little more involved than a Petula Clark song, if you're trying to get into classical or jazz or anything that's not really, really pop music, you're kind of screwed because you can find a really bad Russian recording of Liszt Requiem Mass. You can't find the really good one that everybody says that you should get. And we're not talking about something that is, nobody has heard of. We're talking about the definitive recording.
So you're saying the selection is inadequate.
But not only that,
I don't think that's a permanent liability. That's just a question. The selection was sucked at iTunes for the first year.
Not only that, but it's not as browsable as iTunes. The problem is when I go to Amazon to buy music, I want better than downloads. I want to buy the actual CD and uncompressed audio. Okay, uncompressed, unlocked, and I can re-rip it into any format that I want, not just MP3. I just don't have any room.
I would submit that neither you nor Alex, I mean, if you're going to make your argument, that neither you or Alex are the test case. The test case is the average, 18-year-old idiot who just says, well, I think iTunes.
I think they're probably going to prefer the iTunes application.
Yeah. No, I think the content... I agree with Andy but I think the content is fine. The 256 is great. I think that's not a problem. Non-DRM is great. I mean, what they're doing is great at Amazon. It's just that, like, for instance, I want to go buy Louder Than Bombs by the Smiths. It is painful for me to just get down to where I'm just looking at the Smiths compared to iTunes, and then I find out all they have is the first album.
It's literally two pages.
It's
two clicks. How is two clicks on Amazon
Smiths,
different than two clicks on iTunes?
It's a web page. The thing is that it doesn't give you, the thing is, if I hit the Smiths on iTunes, I get in the top area, I see all the different things that are connected. I click on that thing, I'm there. I don't find, the last time I went anyway, I just was like, I couldn't explore anything and try to find something. I mean, if I want something that's mainstream, and maybe it's just that the search mechanism mixed with the fact that their catalog isn't full yet, is just like, I just keep on running into dead ends on the Amazon one. And I want it to be successful. I want iTunes to have real competition. I just don't find myself going there very often.
My only point is that if you're going to look at a chink in Apple's armor, it isn't the iPod. That device has a solid lock on it. It's the fact that the content guys don't want them to be too strong, and the content guys are going to do their best to undermine them. and Apple can't control that. Well, and I think the content guys have to go to Apple. That's where I disagree with your premise.
I don't think they have to go to Apple. I think that the danger that they run into is that Apple has a kind of a latent possibility of really allowing more independent producers to monetize their work.
Latent
and if
is
Apple
the word.
Turns that switch on.
Yeah, but we've been talking about that for 4 years.
I know, but the thing is that as this pressure keeps on building, if
you
they
don't
allow
think
that,
Amazon
if they
could
allow,
do that.
What?
Why couldn't Amazon do that?
Amazon could do it, but I'm just saying that Apple has a vertical market. If I can export out of Final Cut or out of Soundtrack or out of any of those things directly into iTunes,
go right into it. Yeah,
you have all those tools, and if you start feeding those tools straight into the app, you know, and you can set up the whole.
I think you
thing
do that, the Department of Justice comes after you for antitrust violations.
I don't think they're too small. It's too small of a market. I mean, it's not. They don't.
They're
own
the number
that
two
market.
Retailer now.
I'd also like to point out
as long as Amazon's there. And as long as Walmart's there, and as long as Netflix is there, it'd be tough to make that case.
Unless Apple's software automatically goes to the iTunes Store and doesn't go anywhere else. Apple's already got a problem with the fact that you buy stuff on the iTunes Store, you have to play it on an iPod.
Gone anywhere. Well, no, yeah, but none of that stuff's really gone anywhere.
Not
in the U.S. In the EU,
that's 80% of the market. That's 80% of their market.
You cannot buy Louder Than Bombs on either the iTunes Store or Amazon. So,
and for Dan,
panic on the streets of London. Yes. Panic on the streets of Berlin.
The nights are much longer.
The reason I didn't look, and this is to your argument, Merlin. The reason I haven't even looked on iTunes is because I haven't. I'm not interested in buying DRM software,
which is why I buy stuff. I just think it's an affront that you cannot buy that record because it's really
it is. Do
any of you guys go to record stores and buy CDs still?
Yeah,
naked.
I do. I buy them. I rip them and I put them in a little box.
That's like you're gonna get letters for this one, so I won't say it. That to me is the ultimate fallback. Is like I start on let's just say seeing if it's any place that I can find it handy, and if it's not there, I go to Amazon. If it's not on Amazon, I go to iTunes, and then I super grudgingly go. The only way I'm gonna get this Fairport Convention record is to buy it from Amazon.
Fairport Convention.
Yeah, because I'm actually 70. They have a couple really, really good records.
I think only Scott actually remembers Fairport Convention.
I don't even remember that.
It's Richard Thompson's first big band. But anyway, but it's true. I mean, for me, it's not something like, and I'd love to hear other people's long-winded explanations on the explanations as well. But for me, it's just not part of my workflow anymore. I don't go to the mall just unless I have to. I don't find myself in like media stores anymore. And also I think it's really related to the whole ubiquitous capture thing. The times that I think about stuff that I want tends to be when I'm in front of the computer. It's when I'm watching YouTube or when I'm like looking at BitTorrent and I go, you know what, I really want this Zombies box set, so like I want it now. You know what I mean? It isn't like I walk around the store and go, gosh, what do I want to spend $22 on?
This points out, though, the biggest deficiency in the way information is presented on the internet and the way that media is sold on the internet. It's great at helping you find something you're looking for. It's not great at helping you discover something. It's not great for browsability. If I go when I go to the Barnes and Noble to buy this next copy of Air and Space, there are going to be magazines next to it that are sort of grouped with it that I'm going to be looking at as well. Barnes and Noble is still good for books. I don't really buy music anywhere because I really can't count on finding, if it's popular enough to be in Barnes and Noble or a typical music store, it's popular enough to be available, you know, as a digital download. But this gets back to what I really like about iTunes, that it makes it very, very easy to say, if I've just done a search for Downtown by Petula Clark, and I just don't like that sort of pop, you know, poppy bubblegummy, but I can click once, click twice, and find other people who have done that version, or click playlists that other people have built where people think, well, this is sort of a similar in context to these other songs that I have. It's way, way more browsable, way, way more explorable. I can say with absolute certainty that my musical horizons have been broadened by iTunes in a way that an approach like the Amazon Music Store would never be able to help me with.
I agree, and if you look at the alphabetized list of artists at the music store, that's really the only comparison you get versus, you know, people who bought this album bought these. I've discovered lots of great jazz guitarists that I had not heard of as a result of that. I bought their songs. I would have never bought them otherwise on iTunes. And, You know, I have once or twice, I take it back, bought a CD in the last year, but it was only because I knew I wanted to burn it onto three or four computers.
Yeah, that role has been completely taken over by friends in my life. No, I'm serious.
No, he's talking about serendipity, and I agree with you.
Yeah,
I look at things like Twitter. Okay. I learn more about stuff I didn't know about.
Twitter and what videos people post. When I see, that's where I learn about music is what people's now playing is. And I go, okay, well, this is somebody who, you know, that's the reputation economy to me. It's like, I see, it's not what iTunes thinks I would like, 'cause I don't like pop music, which is,
well, I think that this is one area that the record industry has really cut its nose off on among many others. But the issue is that there's many of us that would love to do radio shows, you know, shows that say this is the kind of stuff that we really love to listen to, but we can't because we can't use their music. And if we could use their music, we could do great shows. You know, I used to listen when I was growing up, I think we might've talked about this, listen to Rock Over London. And the thing is that's how I got new. It's one of the ways when I was a kid, how I got new music in, and we can't make those shows. We can't make those podcasts, and people would love to make the podcasts and people would love to listen to them, but we can't do it because we don't have the licensing that we need to play up to, let's say, up to 15 seconds or 30 seconds or 45 seconds of the song.
Is this anything you know anything at all about, Scott Bourne? I'm just curious.
The licensing side?
No, I'm just imagining there must have been some part of your life where this was like all you had to think about.
That radio. I negotiated the first ever online audio license for music with a guy named Bennett Linkhoff, who was an attorney at ASCAP.
There was a point I remember in Tallahassee where like my friends, a friend of mine who had a bar and another one who had like a little, you know, cafe, they were getting like the lawyers coming and knocking door because they had a TV or something.
Well, you know who actually knocks on the door?
Muzak.
It's Muzak.
Muzak, yeah.
Yeah. See, they come in and go, hey, we noticed you're playing music. Did you know that was illegal? Now, if you just work through us, we've got all your licenses. Yeah. So those are really the guys that strong-armed everybody.
Yeah.
I'm with you, Alex. I think it's a shame. And really, Jonathan Colton talked about this on Twit, Sunday before last. Best Twit ever. Wasn't that a good one though, Leo?
I had a great time. I loved it.
But he talked about this. He's like, you know, he said, what was his two things? So was it, Tom that asked him, like, if you got pulled into somebody's office, some big wig, and you had to give advice on how to change the music industry, you know, what would you say? And the first thing he said is, what did he say? The first thing was get rid of DRM. It's pointless. And the second one was, file sharing is not the enemy, I think was his exact.
Yeah.
And I think what you're talking about, Alex, it's absolutely true. Mixtapes. I cannot tell you how many bands I've bought the entire oeuvre of based on hearing them on a mixtape in like 1986.
That's 90% of how I learned about bands.
That's such a short
game. Since I was 12.
So I think Andy's right that you do lose some serendipity. It is a more constrained environment, but I think there are solutions to it, both in the environment. iTunes has always, you know, other people bought and has recommendations. There's quite a bit of serendipity there. But people have always really gotten most of their ideas from friends. And there are more ways to do all of that now than ever before. I mean, I'm in touch with a lot of different people with a lot of different recommendations constantly. Mixtapes are nothing compared to what we do now.
I have that. I enjoy that sort of recommendations from friends too, and also catching stuff on YouTube that sounds like, or even actually more often, seeing someone on Letterman or on Conan O'Brien and wanting to see like what they've got on the iTunes store and stuff like that. But even then, it's rare that I don't wind up. Well, it's rare that I wind up buying the thing itself. Usually, I wind up seeing something that was adjacent to it. It's not that a piece of software is recommending something to me. For there was a really great recording that I just happened across on YouTube. I was doing random Letterman searches where Sammy Davis Jr. doing a song that I had never heard before called Blame It On My Youth. That turns out to be a really great standard. Could not find the Sammy Davis Jr. version, but there are like 40 different versions of it because it is a jazz standard. And I wound up buying three versions of it. I don't know how long it would take me to. And again, it's just so easy for iTunes to let you do that sort of exploration. I'm glad that all these different tools are there, but I'm not sure if the way that I buy music would be possible via any other application than iTunes. I just think that Amazon really needs to pull its socks up and try to do something better than a web page.
And I think
what it's worth, Andy, you can get it for 99 cents on Amazon from an album called The Wham of Sam.
Oh, I'm sorry. It is on the web. I'm sorry. You're correcting me. It is on the web, Sam, in iTunes.
That's a smart looking cover too. That's a very cool cover.
See how fast Merlin found that? we're sitting here complaining, oh, it's hard to find. You go to a record store and find it in 3 seconds. I dare you. I mean, I think
it makes me realize how crazy a place like Virgin is. You think about that Virgin store on the corner by your office, Alex, and you think about it's this entire edifice full of plastic. The entire store is plastic and a little bit of paper, and then some warm carbon life forms punching in numbers.
Crazy.
And place how that's like something. It's like something from the '20s. It's unbelievable.
Great boss, Merlin. We'll get some carbon life form.
We need more carbon life forms.
Carbon life form, Madison.
And by the way, the carbon life forms there, they're not that warm.
Oh, you've tried it.
That's the restraining order.
They're kind of cold sometimes.
And of course, one block away is Rasputin's, where they have the same plastic, but it's 2/3 off.
However, really, I mean, let's be realistic here. We're kind of taking for granted what this revolution has happened here. I mean, you know, you could complain about serendipity or lack of thereof, or the ability to find recommendations. You could complain about iTunes being not, you know, Amazon being easier to use than iTunes. We're still way ahead of the game here. I mean, this is a revolution, and maybe we're just a little spoiled. I think Amazon's perfectly usable, frankly.
I am not spoiled. Did you ever see the Eula on a wax cylinder?
All right, we're going to do our recommendations, our picks.
I'm being serious. Have you ever seen it, Leo?
No, there is no. Is there a Eula on a wax cylinder?
Andy, back me up on this.
You had Edison's men, big guys with axes, which smash any machine using a competing standard.
Edison had like a long paragraph. He had like a huge paragraph on the front of every wax cylinder about copyright on it. I mean, it's unbelievable to look at.
Actually,
it's hilarious.
I do have an Edison cylinder 2 rooms away on the top of my TV. So
go get it.
I'm gonna see if it's still there. Hang on.
Go get it. Andy's gonna go to get it. We're gonna do our picks in just a bit, and Andy will do a dramatic reading from an Edison wax cylinder. You're gonna want to stay tuned for that, kids. But before we do all that, maybe I should recommend an Audible book. I got so much heat this past week for recommending an Orson Scott Card book. Because unbeknownst to me, apparently Orson Scott Card has made some anti-homosexual comments. So I'm not going to recommend a homophobe to my knowledge.
You should make up. You should make good on it. You should do an Oscar Wilde book or something.
There you go. Hey, how about Armistead Maupin?
Oh, well played.
You know,
he's a hell of a writer.
And really, really great in audiobooks. If you've not read Tales of the City, that is, you know, a great way to listen. There we go. This will make it up to him. Our gay listeners are going to love this. This is, who reads this? You know, it doesn't say. I'm wondering if Armistead Maupin reads it. But you can get Tales of the City, which is 18 hours. And if that's not enough, then get the newest one, Michael Tolliver, which just came out. Michael Tolliver Lives. Great stuff. Wonderful writer. And a writer, I think, who writes for voice. He has a very strong voice, and it's a really good choice for audiobooks. I mean, I just love these. I just love these books. And not an ounce of homophobia in them. Highly recommended. I'm glad we went down this what do we call them?
Rat hole.
Because these are great, great books, and I haven't read them in a long time. Add them to your audio book list, your wish list. That's one of the best things I think about Audible, is that you can pick books, put them on your wish list, and then when you're in the mood to read something new, you just go to audible.com, audible.com, click check out in the cart, and within minutes you'll have those books on your computer. You burn them to CD, put them on your iPod and listen. And I feel like Audible's dispensing candy. I mean, this stuff is so great. I just listened to a wonderful book by a guy named Alan Bennett, who's a British author. Just, he's dry and wry and fast. And you just feel like, wow, I am so glad I listened to that. If you want to get a free book, you can do it right now if you're not already an Audible member. And I know most of you are by now. audible.com/MacBreak. Check in there and you'll sign up. You get a free book. If you decide not to stick around, don't worry. You can keep the book forever. And I highly recommend Tales of the City. I'm going to put that on our recommendation list because that is just a wonderful listen. Audible.com/MacBreak. We do thank them for their support of all of the Twitch shows. Andy, are you back?
I am back. I am back. Unfortunately, it turns out that I put the Edison cylinder where it belongs, which means that there's no chance I can ever find it.
Your filing system.
I bought like three of them at the MIT flea market like 2 years ago, and I put them on top of the TV because they look cool. Then apparently at some point I realized, you know, that's silly to put the Edison cylinders on the top of a TV set. I should put them where they belong. And I'll find that when I move house in a few years.
I'm sure it's online somewhere.
Shall I do a reading of one of these?
Do you have one? Yeah.
This is from, it looks like, this is off of the Flickr. Let's see. So this is made at the Edison Laboratory, Orange, New Jersey, USA. It has a series of patents. It mentions about 11 patents, and it goes, this record is sold by the National... May I do it in that voice?
Please do it in that voice.
This is great.
This record is sold by the National Photograph Company at Orange, New Jersey, upon condition that it shall not be sold to any unauthorized dealer or used for duplication, and that it shall not be sold or offered for sale by the original or any subsequent purchaser, except by an authorized jobber, to an authorized retail dealer for less than 35 cents apiece. Upon any breach of said condition, the license to use and vend this record implied from such sale immediately terminates.
Wow. So you actually had no resale rights on your records or your cylinders. Unless you went through a jobber.
That's the RIA's position today.
It is. Edison knew about ripping, he would have said, you can't rip it either.
And he electrocuted an elephant.
I know, I was going to say, if you do, I'm going to electrocute this elephant.
Now, okay, this meme's been floating around for a while now, and I don't know what it means. What happened was that
Nikola Tesla and Westinghouse invented AC, and Edison had DC, direct current.
Right.
And he was trying to persuade everyone that, and the reason AC was more efficient at moving current.
I think you got that reversed. Wasn't it Edison that wanted AC? And Tesla
no, Edison
DC?
At DC.
Oh, okay.
And so what he was trying to do is persuade everyone how dangerous AC was because it was, you know, because it was not grounded in anything. Not really. It's just that you're able to put more voltage in one time. You can kill someone with the DC as well.
Oh, okay.
And so, so what they took this elephant that, and it's, if you go up to YouTube, you'll find it.
It was a bad elephant.
It was a bad elephant. It had killed like two or three people.
It had already been sentenced to death.
Many people say it wasn't like an innocent elephant that was just wandering around and then they shocked it. It was one that they were going to kill anyway. And they fried it and they were afraid they had pumped it with a bunch of poison. So it was going to die no matter what, but it died very, very, very quickly.
But the kicker is Edison made a movie of it and sold it.
Right. That was the other part of it.
Hey, classy humans.
Talk about vertical integration.
Yeah. Yeah. Wow. That's the frying the elephant.
Is there any reason that all of a sudden that's surfacing to everywhere and everybody's talking about it?
It showed up on YouTube and somebody digged it.
Okay.
I think that was
it. It got dug.
Those two things together.
Jonathan seemed like Colton sounded like he'd heard it too.
Yeah. Everybody.
I think the ladies love a Tesla joke.
I think it's really one of the things I really love about being part of this weird, wacky internet community is how these things just kind of spread. And it's very, I've never experienced anything like it.
Talk about serendipity. Who would have known you could have tuned into a podcast about Macintoshes and learned about electrocuting elephants?
There you go. And on that note, let's let Scott Bourne make his pick of the week.
My pick is about a third of an Alex. It's from my buddies at Nick Software, and I call them my buddies because I love everything they do. I wish they were my sponsor. They're not, but I really like their work. Viveza is a plugin that they just released, and I got to play with it at PMA. And man, oh man, if you hate Photoshop layers, this is the program for you. You don't have to do layer masks. You can make wild corrections without mask of any kind simply by putting these control points. It's U-point technology that's been patented by Nick that they sold to Nikon, by the way. Those of you who use the Nikon capture software are probably already familiar with U-point technology. But it allows you to put these points on your picture that says don't put the effect here or do, and control how much of it's there. And I played with it in 15 minutes, fell in love with it. I was just really anxious for it to ship. It's shipping. It's available. You can get a free 15-day trial at nicksoftware.com.
And what does it do?
It's basically for editing photographs. It allows you to do things like color correction, things that you would typically have used a layer mask for in Photoshop. You don't need to use a layer mask. You simply put these points here and say, I want to take this dress, which has now got some, on their website, they have an example, a bride and a groom standing in a wheat field. And the original photograph, the white dress picked up a lot of the golden color of the wheat. Mm-hmm. And you can completely remove the golden color of the wheat without, you know, removing it on the wheat, just removing it on the dress using the control point technology. Normally, you'd have to create a layer mask to do that. So it's much faster. It's much more intuitive for people who don't want to face the Photoshop learning curve. Now, $250 is pretty spendy. That's the negative side. But if you're serious about your photography, download the demo. Check it out. I'm amazed by it.
Very cool. From Nix Software, and they did the Color Effects plugin that you recommended.
Yeah, the one that I recommended, Color Effects Pro 3.0. This is a perfect complement to that. With those two pieces of software, you can basically do anything you need to a photograph in Photoshop without hardly ever touching the Photoshop tools.
It's kind of ironic, isn't it?
It is.
Viveza is V-I-V-E-Z-A. Okay. Merlin, you got a pick for us?
Yeah, I do. It's a weird one. Our friend Alcor, who makes Quicksilver and other things under his blacktree.com aegis, has kind of, well, he's a very mysterious guy to begin with, but he's got yet another mysterious piece of software that's kind of cropped up, and it's kind of hard to find. But basically, if you search on Blacktree and Secrets, you should be able to find the Google Code project that he's working on. Secrets is a preference pane that, once installed, exposes preferences that you didn't know were available in things, and allows you to set them as defaults.
Where are these? How do they? I mean, how can an application have preferences you don't know about?
Yeah, may I speak freely by pulling things out of my butt, Leo?
Yes, I think you go right.
Guess what it does is it trawls through your plists and looks for different kinds of XML properly. Well formed, which is to say, in the sense of creating as per closing tag, the ability to, I don't know.
So does it find preferences, hidden preferences, even in applications it doesn't know about?
Well, what it does is, I think what it does is, I'm guessing it must trawl through your library, basically.
Yeah, I think you sound sensible.
Guessing key lists or something. But anyway, it pulls up and you have just little tick boxes and, in some cases, little values for stuff you didn't know you could do. Yes, is this an incredibly crazy thing to possibly screw up an application? Almost certainly. It's very res-edit. It's a little bit res-edity. You know that feeling of you might be accidentally cutting off your finger and you're not even sure what you're doing? That could definitely be it. I think it's a very interesting, very promising application because I, for one, I'm very interested in what we can do by tweaking the defaults in our programs and in our life. So I'm going to keep an eye on this program. Like I say, the easiest way to find it is just to Google for Blacktree and Secrets, and you'll see
look
the first
all
thing that comes
these.
Up is Google Code.
Wow. It does it does a lot of applications.
Oh, did you already get it?
Oh, yeah. I installed it immediately. I do everything you tell me to do, Merlin.
Oh, thank you. Do you have Audio Scrobbler installed?
I don't.
But it's... Notice how well look, some of them you see a ton of things you didn't know you could do.
Yeah.
So Alcor will, as usual, be very angry that I've even mentioned it because he doesn't like people using his software. But there's lots of cool neat things you can tweak in here. I think it's
even in Xcode. If you have Xcode installed, there's a ton of settings for Xcode.
That's right.
Wow. Now, some of these are exposed in the preferences, but maybe some of them aren't.
Well, like, for example, look at the Finder. Go click on Finder.
Yeah, look at all
and
that.
And you see all this, like, it looks like basically debug menu type stuff right. that get exposed.
Wow. Maximum label lines. You could make your label 3 lines long.
So, you know what I mean? That feeling of res edit? The first time
That could be a problem.
Let me just go change this one number.
Let's see what happens.
Perhaps now is a good time for the disclaimer about this product.
Look, you can, you know, there's a big disclaimer when you install it. It says, warning. Here's one you says, prohibit use of eject, prohibit emptying trash, prohibit use of preferences.
That's right on the site. Many of these values can harm your system if used improperly. Use it at your own risk.
So much fun.
Finally, a preference that lets you turn off all preferences, which means you couldn't turn the preference back on, which means, well, you get the idea.
Oh, by the way, I found a better URL. This is better. Secrets.textdriven, one word, .com.
Good.
And what's cool is he's asking people also, like, hey, what would you like to be able to have access to? So, of course, I chimed in and said, length of default event in iCal, which is the biggest default.
Oh, can you? No. There's one preference in iCal. That's lame.
Exactly.
That's lame. Wow, this is very cool. Good find.
Thank you.
Black Tree.
He's a hell of a guy. He's very, very mysterious. I think he finally found someone to give him work because, as you know, he has a lot of physical deformities. He has kind of a flipper-like appendage that he uses to move the keyboard around.
Is he still in the hyperbaric chamber? Has he found an atmosphere that he can live with?
I think he came into a little bit of money, so basically he's being allowed to stay in the top room of a hospital in London, where an actress occasionally comes and visits him.
Oh, that's nice. Kind of a labor of mercy and love.
I'm not an animal. I'm a coder.
Let's see. Scott Bourne, you got a pick for us?
I think I already gave you one.
Okay, so you want to skip that part.
I think it really resonated with you.
Who keeps moving my medicine?
I'm ready for soup now. Viveza, I remember it now. I didn't mean you, Scott Bourne. I meant Alex Lindsay. No, I meant Andy Iannacco, then Alex Lindsay, then me. That's the order. Okay, Alex, I mean Andy
Iannacco. This is what happens when you install secrets. Things just start breaking.
I'm playing with my preferences, and they're all broken.
Pay attention, Leo. Pay attention.
This is when the umpire forces the manager to post the batting order before the commence of the first pitch.
Exactly. Exactly. Bonds, go in. No. Wait a minute. You, Andy, you're in.
I actually changed my pick on the fly because of what we've been talking about all this cool stuff about having unlocked media. A couple weeks ago, I started playing with a really cool digital box for video called the Neuros OSD. This is... when I say it's the 2007-2008 version of a VCR, that sounds like really poor praise, but it actually is big praise. You just plug it into your stack of components. I have mine plugged in between the DVD burner and my TV screen, and it does a whole bunch of different things, but acts just as a VCR. You plug any sort of USB media into it, be it like a 200-500 gigabyte hard drive USB or a flash drive or even just an SD card from your camera into one of the slots in the front of it. And basically it comes with a wireless remote. If there's something on TV you want to record, you press the record button and it records it onto any one of those storage media as standard, unprotected, unlocked, full motion, 30 frames per second, 640 by 480 MP4 files. So what you can do is, what I've been doing is, my usual domestic piracy setup is I record shows that I want on my TiVo. If it's stuff that I want to really, really keep, like Junkyard Wars, while I'm watching it, I'll burn it onto a DVD. I have a really cool, huge spindle of burned DVDs just called Random TV with the date on it. So I can just pluck any one of these discs when I travel and have 6 hours with a really cool TV shows that I felt was worth watching. But now I also have this, 8 gigabyte flash drive plugged into the Neuros device, and I also record it onto this device. So just the other day, when I was rushing out the door to make it to a meeting, normally the idea of taking a TV show and moving it onto my MacBook or moving it onto my iPhone, usually it would mean some sort of conversion process, some sort of a pre-planned sort of thing. Because I had my MacBook with me, all I had to do was just yank my flash drive out of the Neuros device, board the train, then just simply plug it into my USB port, and I have about 10 hours worth of MP4 files. It's a lot more sophisticated than that. In that, if you do decide to put the, random FAT32 big hard drive put into the USB connector on there, it will organize your videos. You can organize things into folders. You can rename the files, whatever you want. So it is possible to have just the permanent archive of all your video just stored onto this local hard drive. Now, the other cool thing is that it doesn't seem to care that the source of a video is a DVD. So you can take, the house box set that you bought off Amazon at discount, just copy every single one of those things onto the hard drive. Now, those of you who are listening are probably smart enough to know that, well, gee, why would I want to do that? That converts it to an analog step. Wouldn't I want to just burn it, rip it using Handbrake and keep it completely digital? That's true, but there are a lot of people that really are never going to really understand that. This makes converting a DVD into mobile video files or desktop or archive video files as simple as just picking up a remote and pressing the record button. It is really the sort of thing that my parents could understand, anyone that I'm talking to could easily understand, and it keeps your video very, very easily at the place where you're most likely to want to see it, which is right next to your TV set, with the option of later on copying it onto a memory card and putting it onto your smartphone, or again, importing it into your iTunes library and syncing it to your iPod or your iPhone. And it's not that expensive. It's you can buy it discounted for $165, $170. And it's just, what I love about it is just the pure simplicity of it. It doesn't make it any more complicated than it absolutely has to be.
Very good. I've seen this before, and I never knew anybody who's used it, and I wasn't going to buy it until I heard somebody review it. So that's encouraging. That's great.
I'm a fan. That's just about 60% of what you can do with it.
Is it you think an Apple TV killer?
I don't think. Well, they're two very different devices. It's not for acquiring content from the internet, even though it does have
a TiVo thing, basically.
Well, no, again, I prefer to think of it as just, imagine a VCR with an Ethernet port and, again, okay, memory card slots and USB.
Yeah.
That's the easiest way to get to it. Again, you can do cool things with it, like it can watch videos via YouTube if you have Wi-Fi if you have it plugged into a network of some sort. It can grab photos off of online and use it as a photo viewer and that sort of thing. But again, the sweet spot of it is that just this idea that I have this hard drive that, you know, for God's sakes, people, who uses a 250-gigabyte hard drive anymore? That's crazy talk. So I just took an old hard drive that I haven't used anymore. I keep it there. Now, whereas I still burn the DVDs because it's a cool way to just have these random discs of television. It's really, really cool to know that regardless of how much storage I have on the TiVo, I always have months and months worth of really good video on my hard drive, not just for viewing on my TV set, but also something that I could very, very easily, again, stick that USB drive, go through a couple menus and say, please copy the following video files onto this flash drive. And then, you know, 10 minutes later, I'm out the door and I've got the video that I want to watch while I'm in flight.
That's very cool. Neuros OSD, N-E-U-R-O-S, O-S-D.
Yeah. Neurostechnology.com will take
you. How much is that again?
I believe it lists for, I'm not going to guess what it lists for. I have the price fixer list over here. The cheapest price for it is about 150 something. The median price is like 160, 170. You can buy it at Amazon, buy Newegg, J&R Fries, the usual Nerdoplex ED.
Cool.
That's a good, I mean, anything under $200, I think, is a very good price for something like
that. It's a small, compact, it's compact enough that you could actually take it with you when you travel. If you're going to be staying at the house of a friend who you know has a really, really huge, huge collection of public domain DVDs.
If they're copy protected, that doesn't slow it down.
All the commercial DVDs I've tried with it have worked just fine. Again, just as easy as duplicating uncopy protected stuff. Just press on the DVD, press record on the Neuros, it works just fine.
So it's using the analog hole, basically, to get it.
Right. It's not digital. It is analog.
Right.
There is going to be some degradation. But considering that you're not going to be ripping it at HD to begin with, that's okay. As a matter of fact, just how well thought out this thing is, built in without having to do anything with desktop software, you can tell it what sort of device this video is going to land on. By default, I record it at the maximum possible resolution and frame rate. But even if you have just an old $50 phone with media features, you can have it recorded at 160 by 120, 15 frames per second, so that it has an iPod setting, it has a Sony PSP setting. It's just very, very well thought out. The kicker is that it's an open API, and they encourage people to write their own software.
Ah.
They can then download and install as a firmware update. You just download it onto a flash drive on your desktop, then plug it into the device, double-click, basically select it from the on-screen menu, and it will install this new software.
That's excellent. I was wondering. So it's completely upgradable. That's great.
Yeah.
No storage, by the way, with that. You supply your own storage.
You supply your own storage, but it'll work with anything. Memory has memory card slot readers, has a USB connector, anything you got, as long as it's FAT32 formatted. So you can even use it with your iPod. As a matter of fact, if you're formatted for Windows, if the file system is formatted for FAT32, not only can you store video on it, you can't play it on the iPod, thinking, but you can at least use it as a storage device. But we'll also be able to find and play unprotected MP3s within the file system of the iPod. So you plug in your iPod and then you can navigate the content because it knows where the hidden directories are. But again, only not if you format it as a Mac volume. If you format it as FAT32, if you format it on a Windows machine with Windows iTunes, it will work.
Very good. Neuros OSD. I have a question before I give my pick, and then we'll get to Alex Lindsay because he always has something really expensive. Have we done PodWorks yet?
Oh.
No, I don't think so.
I know Andy uses it, and I can tell Merlin might use it. This is a great little program. You know, there are a lot of programs for copying files, music off of your iPod. And of course, Apple continually changes iTunes and the iPods to make that hard. This is the latest from sci-fi-hi-fi.com. Podworks is fantastic. By the way, works with the iPhone even. We'll bring over playlists. We'll bring in metadata. So, in fact, you can even just get the metadata. So if you copy, if you have the files, but you want to get the ratings or the off of your iPod, it'll copy them right over. Or the last played date. It is an amazing program, kind of the ultimate iPod copy tool. And you can try before you buy, but it's only $8. And of course, I didn't even bother with it. At $8, I just bought it. And I think rightly so. You must know Buzz Anderson. He's on Twitter all the time.
Interviewed him at Macworld last year.
Did you?
We interviewed him.
Oh, he did Cocalicious, of course. What am I saying?
He's tremendous. He's a wonderful guy, and I have no idea why he only charges what he does for that.
$8.
I personally saved at least two different friends from what they thought was like basically where their computer died, but they couldn't get their stuff off their iPod. I have saved butts for that little modest fee twice now.
Yeah, it's the must-have iPod utility. You agree, Alex?
I agree. I don't have it, but I know I need it because I have an iPod where I lost some of the data. It's an old iPod, and there's a bunch of songs on there. I think that's the only place they are, and I need something like that to get it off. So it's great.
Yeah. The best thing about it, a lot of people are probably shaking their heads, thinking, "Oh God, another iPod." You know,
there's a million of them. Yeah.
This is the first one I've ever seen where it looks like it was designed. Not so the programmer could do this one thing and then never use it again. It was designed like a really slick, really professional looking piece of software. I can vouch for it. When my hard drive crashed last month, I had my songs backed up, but I had a lot of playlists that hadn't been backed up because you can't back up playlists. So I got my snow shoveling playlist. I got my morning constitutional playlist back. Again, just like you said, I mean, it's the easiest $8 you'll ever spend.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it was actually a Twitter post of yours, Andy, that convinced me to try it out. It's just really great. And by the way, Cocalicious has been updated so that it now works again. So for those of you who have been...
Heck of an upgrade there.
It works again. I was totally dependent.
I don't think that's Buzz's fault. I mean, isn't their API the delicious...
Oh, absolutely. They changed the API. He added the new URL. And you had mentioned on the show a fix, and it's out now built into Cocalicious 1.0b43, just to make sure you have the latest. Now, ladies and gentlemen, by the way, $8 is 1/100th of an Alex.
a little more.
Let's
96th of an Alex.
Okay, 1/96th of an Alex. Let's see, because an Alex is $700.
Yep.
Yes.
Okay, the cost of Photoshop. So what is Alex flogging today?
I'm going to recommend two applications, and they are together, combined, about a sixth of an Alex.
All right.
All right, so this just happens to be something that I've been playing with. I was working on something for This Week in Photography, and then I showed it. We were recording stuff last week, and I really am just having so much fun with these applications. And so the two applications, and what it is it's getting into this idea in photography of what we call tonal mapping, which is this idea that I can take a bunch of exposures, so from the darkest darks to the brightest brights, and I can combine them all into one image that has just an enormous amount of range. You can see everything from the filaments in the light to the, you know, all the way out to the brightest things outside, all in the same image. The problem is then you have to squeeze that in so that you can see it all at one time. And what you end up with, if you go up to Flickr and do a search for HDR or tonal mapping, you'll see all of these incredible landscapes, especially, that just look surreal because they're so because what they've done is you can see the sunset and you can see the foreground as well. Everything is in exposure. It looks like you have the ultimate fill flash, you know. And so it's just a really, really fun thing. And the tools have been very difficult up until lately to actually make these, and so no one does them, or they've been we've used them in production for a long time, but for production now I'm starting to use it when I realized how easy it was with these new tools. I just shoot everything this way. And the two tools are one's called Bracketeer and the other one is called Photomatics Pro. Bracketeer is Mac only. It is actually a front end for a command line program, and it's only $20. It's from Pangea Software, who make a lot of other great stuff. And so it's $20, and you can literally just grab a bunch of photos that you took. And literally, this is as easy as turning on your camera and just setting to auto bracket and pushing the button, and it'll grab a bracket of images, and you can just drag these into Bracketeer, and it'll create a tonal mapped image for you instantly. So it's really, really cool. The Photomatics Pro is once you get, Bragateer is a great place to get started. Once you get going, I'm finding that I'm really enjoying the control that I have with Photomatics Pro, and it's $99. And it's called from HDR Soft software, I think, but it's HDRsoft.com. And it's $99, and it lets you build the HDRs, and you have a lot more tools to kind of work with the tonal mapping process. Both of them are easy, easy, easy. I did a video for, I think we just put it out, for This Week in Photography, TWIP, that shows you, kind of walks through these. And there, it's super easy. Anybody could do it. Anybody, you know, and it's a lot cheaper than Photoshop to kind of put that together. And so Photoshop will do HDRs, this is a lot. This is really simple, not as expensive. And, you know, once you start playing with it, it's really hard to think about the way you shoot, especially scenic scenes, the same. So, anyway, those are the two applications.
Very cool. You demonstrated those on the TV show, and I thought they were really impressive.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, we're out of time, everybody. I thought it was a fascinating show. We appreciate your patience during our hiatus last week. I'm taking steps to see that that never happens again. We should also mention that we are probably going to move this show. We have been coming out on Tuesdays. We used to come out on Wednesdays. As soon as I moved it to Tuesdays, Apple started making announcements on Tuesdays. So we're going to move it back to Wednesdays. We'll swap with Net at Night. So Net at Night will come out on Tuesdays and MacBreak Weekly on Wednesdays. So don't be disturbed if tomorrow or next week you see the show a day later. That's our new time, just so we make sure we don't miss any important Apple stuff. Also, if Apple does make any really surprising big announcements on Thursday, we'll do a special edition of MacBreak Weekly and push it out right away. We don't anticipate anything other than what we've already talked about on the show, but you never know. Andy Iannacco is at the Celestial Waste of Bandwidth.
Yes, we are in our happy place, and the happy place is at CWOB.com.
And great site. Really great. And, of course, on the Chicago Sun-Times. Scott Bourne is part of This Week in Photography, TWIP, along with Alex Lindsay. That is a great new podcast. Big, big bestseller on iTunes, even though it's free.
I was going to say, are we getting paid?
No. And everyone's buying it. Everybody's buying it.
For nothing. You'll find it on iTunes. Just go to the technology section or go to pixelcore.tv. Podango.com is Scott's company, and he's got a bunch of podcasts there, including the Apple Phone Show, the iLife Zone, Girls Gone Geek. That's at girlsgonegeek.tv. Anything else you want to announce or show off?
You've been very kind. Thank you.
All right. Many plugs. One guy, many plug. Also, Merlin Mann, speaking of many plugs.
Yes.
He's at fives.com, number 5ives.com, 43folders.com. And everywhere you want to be, including Twitter, where he has once again outpaced me for the number of followers.
Well, we had that bug.
Yeah, but after the bug, I thought, oh, finally. I'm finally beating Scoble. I wasn't worried about beating you. I know I'll never beat you. But I thought, I'm finally beating Scoble. We come back after the bug, in which we all have 65,535 followers. And I'm still at what I thought I had, which was like 7,500.
Can I put this in context for
Merlin's
you?
At 8,300. Scoble's at 11,000. All of a sudden, he jumps 4,000 followers.
Yeah, he's streaming live right now. but here's the thing, Leo. Let me explain. I'm Hillary Clinton, and you're Obama. Like, your trend line is a lot stronger.
Aha! I'm coming up.
I'd be happy to be overtaken by you.
We should remind all of our listeners in Texas, Ohio, Rhode Island. Where else? And where?
Vermont.
Vermont, that's right. Vote today. Your vote counts. We're not going to tell you who to vote for. Just make sure you vote.
You know who to vote for.
You know what the right thing is to do. I was at a meeting yesterday. Larry Lessig was speaking, and I just thanked him for that great video he made. Because that was, I think, helped me convince my wife.
Really turned me around to Ron Paul, was that one video.
The Ron Paul video is incredible.
It was one word at a time. It took about 3 hours to go through.
Amazing. Another Mac break is broke.